Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another very fun episode of TFL Talking Trucks. We have it jam-packed of really cool news. And with me is my good friend, Nathan.
Howdy, boys and girls. Good to see you.
Yeah, dude. So, first of all, I wanted to kind of catch up with you. We haven't done a podcast together, in about a month, maybe more.
Yeah. So,
I really wanted to catch up with you. And then we have a piece of news, which is kind of related to TFL space. Just kind of, we're actually creating some news, not reporting some news. And then I had a trip of a lifetime that I just got back from. And I really wanted to tell you about my experience at the Dakar rally in Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely. I am so happy for you. I'm a little jealous, but I'm more happy that out of everybody at TFL, I knew that you would appreciate something like this the most, so I'm thrilled about it. I can't wait to hear all about it.
Yeah, but dude, I want to hear a little bit from you. So you, of course, you live in the Los Angeles area, and there have been, you know, some terrible fires going on. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I live not too far from Honda headquarters, and the area of Torrance and part of Redondo Beach and whatnot, it's like an island of concrete. So we're not very close to the mountains and a lot of the fire areas. So it's a very safe area. As a matter of fact, we had to take some family members and bring them over to my place for a few days when the fires were really starting to rage. But if you look around right now, things are pretty blue in the sky, but there's still a lot of particles. They say that if you go outside, you have to wear a mask because the particulates in the air, think about it, what's been burning. It's not just trees, it's houses and all the chemicals. So there's been some issues. My cousin Jake is fighting those fires. He's actually a fireman, and he's been out there absolutely kicking butt with his friends. So I really, really do want, if anybody from the Los Angeles Fire Department or any of their affiliates or from Mexico or from Canada who have come down here to help, you guys are miracle workers. Thank you for dealing with so much difficulty. But yeah. I'm cool. Not a problem here. My tan is a little bit weak, though. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, I'm not quite as bronzed as I used to be because I've been indoors so much, but I'll get over it.
That's good to know, dude. And of course, we really appreciate all the responders and also all the help, the outpouring of help that, you know, a lot of the people are receiving. And I actually know there's some Denver fire departments sent some trucks and some people over as well. So,
I didn't know that. Okay, awesome. Good
so
for Denver.
Your old city of Denver is trying to help out just a little bit.
that's awesome. I'm glad to hear. Well, there's lots of experience that they have as well fighting fires in those mountains. Last year, we almost lost the ranch, right? I mean, it came within just a couple miles. So it's a very real danger. No matter where I go, I can't get away from these fires.
Yeah, no, it is a danger, especially in the West here, right? I mean, we have a lot of dryness, high deserts, and also some vegetation that, you know, can actually burn pretty quickly. So I'm glad you're okay. Everything is, you know, hopefully improving. So
everything is fine. I'm going to be fine. There will be hopefully another video that comes out of here talking about the fires a little bit in the near future, but that'll probably be either on TFL Now or EV. Anyway, everything else here, though, is going okay.
All right. Well, let's hit our small news segment. Remember almost 4 years ago, Roman and Tommy went out and they purchased this old truck. This is a 1965 Ford F-100, the big orange guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. So, we made an interesting choice in terms of its powertrain.
Yeah, so we had it for like a year, right? So the truck had a straight six, you know, just good old, you know, heavy commercial truck engine, which was a bit tired. And the truck was fairly dangerous, actually, if you remember. It was hard to shift. It had almost no brakes. It was
I drove it off-road. I know. That thing
so
was that was it was a bit of a challenge, but it was a lot of fun. Well, it was.
well, yeah, I mean, it was raw experience, right? Because pickup trucks have transitioned into family haulers, right?
Right.
Recently, we were in a Ram RHO, right? Driving cross country. Jen and I had a road trip from Palm Springs, and we had massaging seats, and the truck was driving itself on the highway, and we had really good stereo system. It
Yeah.
was incredible. It was like a limousine, basically.
Well, I would say that around the 1980s, the late 1980s, we started making this transition going from trucks being tools, like actual tools, to being transport that becomes comfortable. Remember the early days of Eddie Bauer and some of these other things that they started doing with trucks and, the Bronco and whatnot? Progressively, it's just gone more and more towards that direction. And here we are. We're at a point now where really trucks are the luxury vehicle and luxury cars are kind of like, meh.
Yeah.
I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And I mean, it's hard to believe, but I think about 25 years ago, where common pickup trucks like the F-150 and the Silverado 1500 and the Ram Dodge actually got crew cabs, right? Before that, only the heavy trucks had four doors. Like if you look at some, 1 ton trucks or even bigger, because they were called crew cabs
Right.
because they were holding crew members.
A crew cab, exactly, crew members. There were king cabs or extra cabs
Yeah.
that have existed for a very long time. But in terms of seeing that progression, now almost every pickup truck, it's the take rate on crew cab, four-door pickup trucks is crazy. It's got to be like close to 85% or something like that.
Yeah,
And only a
probably.
few automakers even build a freaking king cab or a extra cab. Nissan does, and
Well, Tacoma has a two-door with no.
but there's no back seats.
Right, no back seat. Yeah, so it's like we're slowly moving away from kind of like this common pickup truck being an actual tool for work. But this 1965 truck was the raw experience, right?
It was
It
indeed.
was loud. It didn't really have power steering, so the steering wheel was about 2 feet wide, in diameter. Few
3 feet
were,
wide, I would say.
yeah, maybe three, and it would hit me in the belly, right here, as you would sit down.
Yeah, where do you think
So,
it hit me? Yeah, I got a bigger belly. So yeah, it was, but you know what? It was one of those things where I've driven trucks like that since I've been a kid. And even though they're not the world's most comfortable, you figure it out and you find a comfortable position. You have to mold to the truck, whereas nowadays the truck has to mold to you. It's a big difference.
exactly. And so we had a crazy idea. This was like a year into owning this truck. That we wanted to do a project. That's kind of why we buy some of the trucks we buy, for long term. And we decided to EV swap it and really repower it, right? So we talked about the tired engine, the transmission that was, had to be probably redone because it was missing, it was hard to find the gears. So we teamed up with a Legacy EV, which is a company basically that specializes in providing kits for electric swaps. Then we had 101 Motors, which is actually a builder company. Then we had Fox Shocks. So we actually gave it a Fox suspension and also BF Goodrich tires. So we kind of collected, experts from each area. So we wanted to redo the suspension a little bit. We wanted to repower it. We wanted to really make it more usable, but still appear old, so we didn't touch any of the patina. Like it had some rust, it had some dents, it
It's
had,
like three different colors, if I recall, too, because the original color was green,
yeah,
because we think it was a truck that was used by the Forestry Service way back in the day. And then
exactly,
somebody threw, quickly threw a coat of really crappy orange on there.
yeah,
Not particularly well done.
and it had like white bumpers and stuff like that. And it was a cool tr it's a cool looking truck.
I
Well,
thought it was cool. Yeah. I liked it as it was. Yeah.
well, it was a high controversy, right? It's EV swapping a truck like this. But
Yeah.
nonetheless, after many, many months of blood, sweat, and tears, and also lots of money, We finished the project. We have a whole video series. But now this truck is on sale. It's going on sale. But it's a little bit more special than that. It's not just on sale. So currently, the truck is owned by Legacy EV, right? Because we donated the truck towards the project. They invested a lot of money into the parts. And then, of course, 101 Motors invested a lot of labor into it. And Fox donated parts and labor. It was really amazing. But now it's being sold at Barrett-Jackson Scottsdale in January here, 2025. And proceeds from the sale, so whatever money is, that they make, is going to be sent for scholarships for EV technicians. So either automotive technicians who are currently technicians who are, increasing their skill levels to work on electric vehicles, or brand new people in higher education, so like college or technical colleges, who want to learn about electric vehicle training and working on electric vehicles, the money will be used for their scholarships.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Now we do have a few friends who will be at Barrett-Jackson, Moto Man, good friend of ours, and a couple just actual friends of mine at least are going to be there as well. Andre, you normally go every year, but you're not going this year.
No, and I
Sorry.
feel bad about this because I love being there, as you know. First of all, it's an escape. On Saturday here, it's going to be -4 Fahrenheit. So if I could escape and go to Scottsdale for a couple days, you know me, I would jump on that. Also,
Yeah, it's good.
my wife has some family there,
Right.
and also it's the auction, which is a lot of new vehicles, old vehicles, classics, brand new vehicle, VIN number ones. They sell sometimes the very first vehicles off the line.
Yep.
And I can't make it. I feel bad.
Kind of like watching some of these people essentially lighting money on fire. Because I've seen people spend way too much money on cars. This is sort of the Barrett-Jackson thing, but there are a couple different auctions, by the way. It's not all just one auction. There's like a series of them. But regardless, it's still a great event, and I'm thrilled to see that that truck is going there and that the proceeds are going to charity for a worthy cause. Because, like it or not, EVs are still coming. I think they've slowed down a little bit, but considering what I've been seeing out here in LA, they haven't slowed down that much. So anyway, yeah, it's a really good cause. I'm thrilled to hear it. But I hear there's a lot more news coming up with you, my friend.
Yes. So first of all, let's close this down. The reason why I mentioned this on the podcast is that I hopefully people hear this and see this. And if you're there on Wednesday, the 22nd of January, and if you're curious, you're interested, if you bid on it, we want as much value as possible, right? We
Of
want
course.
That's why I mentioned it. So thank you very much for your support. Hopefully somebody buys it. It's been gone over again by the guys at Legacy EV. It has power steering. It has several improvements. Four-wheel drive works flawlessly, they tell me. So really, really a usable vehicle.
So
Now,
the it goes through a the trend it the trend sorry the low gearing, all that is
yeah.
actual gearing. There's nothing to do with the electric motor. The electric motor is only providing power that goes through a shaft in there, right?
Yeah, so it does use the original Ford transfer case, exactly. So it has a highboy transfer case, actually. So it's kind of a mid-mounted transfer case that was divorced from the engine before, from the transmission. And the electric motors are actually sending through a reduction gear, are sending power to the transfer case, and then original, transfer case and drive shafts are actually sending power to the axles. So really, if you remove the electric motors and the batteries, the chassis itself is original. It's got the big axles and the transfer case and the shafts are all there. So that's how
It
we.
was, in its day, one of the earliest examples of a proper off-roading truck with that type of setup, which is why a lot of people back in the day really were trying to find these things on scrap heaps, build them up and get them, built up for off-roading. So,
and the high boy, high boy name is not a Ford term per se.
No,
it was a term kind of enthusiasts gave it, but it was very desirable, right? Because it kind of had equal length drive shafts, you know, transfer cases in the middle. So it had a, you know, a lot of capability with
that. Well, just like square body and stuff like that. A lot of those things are not official names, but we sort of take them on and it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a piece of news that I'm quite excited about, and that it took a while to get this all done, but it's finally coming to fruition, and hopefully it will help a lot of people.
I think so. That's really super cool. Hey, before we go on, can I show you something real quick?
Yeah,
you
what's
said
up?
Sunday's going to be what was it, -4?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be freezing here too. I don't know if you could see that. 56 degrees is going to be our high with ocean breezes, even though there's going to be a lot of ash, because of fires.
Yeah.
So, my friend, if you do hop onto a cheap flight, you could be here in our spare guest bedroom, and I promise lots of cerveza, not cerveza, a bubbly drink for you as you relax. And I'll even, just like Roman likes, I'll put a little umbrella in your drink. Very
Nice.
Californian.
Nice.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Appreciate it very much. But yeah, well, I have to hunker down and protect my house. You know, my
Yeah,
house,
you do.
I told you about this before. It was built poorly back in the early 90s, and I would have freezing pipes here and there, and it's just a mess.
I'm sorry.
So,
I many one of many reasons why I'm not that sad about being away from there, but I still do miss the place. Shall we continue?
yeah. So when I was a little chap, a little boy, I was born in Moscow in Russia, and I would watch this off-road rally, the Paris-Dakar. So from Paris, France to Dakar, Senegal, there was this crazy off-road rally that included motorcycles, off-road SUVs and trucks, and also big semi-trucks that participated in this rally. And I was always kind of was drawn to that. It was automotive, it was motorsports. And I finally got to go to the race just last week. And I was there in person.
Incredible. Explain what this is, and it's no longer Paris-Dakar. In fact, it's really, really not. It's a completely different race, and it's moved around a bit. It did start with the Paris-Dakar rally. That was how it initially started many years ago, and then they had to move it for security reasons, and for a while it was in South America.
Exactly.
And then I think it was like 7 years ago or 8 years ago, it moved back towards the Middle East, but instead of being where it was, it's now the entire thing is in Saudi Arabia, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So actually, the race began in 1978. And actually, that's the same age as me. So I felt another connection there. So originally it was a straight line, right? You started in Paris, France, and you drove and you got on the ferry, you crossed the Mediterranean. And then you were in Africa and you would drive through the Sahara. In a way, it was a straight line, right? So it's a navigation rally, which means the drivers and riders that enter it don't usually know the route until like the day of. So it's not like something you can prepare or pre-map or, you know, use a GPS for or something like that.
Yeah,
It's
there's no GPS allowed, nothing.
Right. But you're allowed instructions that they give you every day for every stage. So it's not just about going fast off-road, which is itself a challenge, right? But it's also about navigation, hitting waypoints along the way. But of course, it's a timed event. So speed is critical. You have to, you know, you want to finish first.
Right.
So before in Africa, and I met one of my childhood heroes, Nani Roma. I don't know if you remember this name, but Nani Roma is a Spaniard. He won twice on a motorcycle.
Yeah, on a motorcycle. Then he, well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, you know him.
Yeah.
He won twice in a car, in a 4x4 SUV. So many people, I don't know, I think there's one other person, maybe Peter Hansel.
Peter Hansel, he He's even done, I believe he's won even more. But yeah, he started on a motorcycle and transitioned to a car as well. Yeah. There's actually quite a few racers who have, but those are the two who are notable.
But to be that successful both on two wheels and being that successful on four wheels, it's a huge task and just a very big thing. So I was invited by Ford Performance. So Ford contacted TFL and they said, you know, they're having some journalists at the event. There's actually like two waves of this happening. I was able to go basically, thank goodness, right? Because Roman may have taken this event, right? Because it's so cool. But
he had other plans.
Yeah, he had other plans. Yeah. So actually Roman and Tommy almost at the same time went to the Tokyo Auto Salon in Japan. So
exactly.
Also, I'm very jealous of that. I've never been to Japan.
Me too.
So yeah,
but so please continue.
Yeah, yeah. So I met Nani Roma for an interview and we chatted a bit. And I've been watching him since like 1996, right?
Yeah.
And
he's been in it for a while.
Yeah, he's in his 50s. I mean, a lot of the racers are actually older gentlemen, or, you know, there's also women racing. So it's not
We know a couple personally.
Yeah, exactly. And also, you know who was there with me? It was Emmy Hall. Emmy Hall was there.
Emmy Hall was our sister from another mister. She worked at TFL for a few years. We've done other videos and other projects together. She's fantastic. She's an actual race driver. And she is a proper automotive journalist, all wrapped into one. Yeah, wonderful. I hope she didn't do anything horrible or embarrassing with you.
That's up to her to tell you those stories. But
did she like leave you in the desert and
no
navigation?
We're actually paired up, which is awesome because we got to drive an F-150 Raptor together.
And you know what? In Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So
mind blown.
Just wait for this. Just wait. Hold on. So we were paired up because obviously we were both from America, right? And we're friends and we know each other. And I was able to get a lot of information from her because one of the things I wasn't sure about is how does Dakar Rally relate to Baja 1000, right? You know, different scenarios, obviously different parts of the world. But, you know, everybody said, you know, the Baja 1000 is the hardest race. And then people at Dakar say Dakar is the hardest race. So I really wanted to, you know, kind of wait and see. I mean, it's a hard thing to answer.
It is.
So we had a lot of fun together. And there were several journalists from Europe. There was a couple from Italy, a couple from France, a couple from England. So there were several journalists altogether. Mm-hmm. And Ford Performance team invited us, and they wanted us to experience some of their vehicles and also the country. I've never been to Saudi Arabia before.
Have you been to the Middle East before?
No. So this was quite special for me, just on many levels. Not just the fact that, you know, it's a Dakar rally that I followed as a child, but also going to a country I've never been to before. I was very curious. I really wanted to experience it. And then, bam, we land at Hail Airport, which is kind of central Saudi Arabia. And it's kind of a small airport. It's like three gates. Mm-hmm. I walk outside, and there's a Bronco Raptor, F-150 Raptor, Ranger Raptor parked outside. And I was like, it feels like Detroit right now, you know? it just felt like home. But what I didn't know is that actually all the Raptor products that we have here in the US are also sold officially in Saudi Arabia.
They have a massive car market out there.
Yeah, and actually their car culture, truck culture, is kind of similar to ours. That's what I found out. Because
they have
lots of open places, lots of straight highways, a very long distances they have to travel, you know, from mm-hmm. one side to the next, so they actually like big vehicles, really powerful vehicles because of sand, right? Because they drive in sand a lot. Of course, Land Cruisers are big, Nissan Patrols. I saw a lot of different vehicles. But I also saw people just driving in Chevy Suburbans. just, you know, just regular, you know, just folks driving from here to there. So
I think gasoline is relatively inexpensive there.
it is. Yeah, so it's very similar to the US. Like if you went to Europe, my goodness, you know,
Oh.
the fuel is expensive.
Can you imagine bringing a Raptor to Europe?
No.
Whew. Our entire annual budget for TFL will be blown just filling that thing up.
Yeah. So very fun. So we stayed in a kind of this glamorous camp, glamping. So the
Glampy.
first night we spent in this tent, in a bunch of tents, which was quite cool and quite unique. We had little heaters, but the temperatures dropped. So you know how deserts
Yeah.
are, right? It's usually warm in the day and very cold at night. So it was below freezing. It was about 30 degrees Fahrenheit, maybe like 28 degrees Fahrenheit in the at night. And thank goodness, you know, the tents were great and I slept really well. They had a shower, outdoor outhouse showers. Unfortunately, the water froze
Oh, no bueno.
in all the showers. But so now I really wanted to learn about the vehicle that Ford is racing. So Ford is racing something called, by the way, this is like the highest level in the car division. I'm using air quotes because these are not really cars. These are custom built, I would call them trucks because a lot of them are based on at least truck architectures. For example, there's some Hilux, Toyota Hilux trucks that converted to race vehicles.
Oh, they've been doing that for years.
Yeah, and others. But this one is a custom built Ford and M Sport, which is a British company who's done rally WRC with Ford. They also built these Dakar vehicles. They're called Ford Raptor T1 Plus. The T1 Plus is the classification of the class they're racing in.
Oh,
Basically,
I see. Okay.
the ultimate, it's called the ultimate T1 Plus. Basically, what that means is kind of like prototype vehicles, and there is not a lot of regulation. So they're regulated by size. So they can only be that wide and that long. And there's a couple of weight restrictions. For example, there is a minimum weight requirement.
Right.
And then it has to use a production engine. So the power plant, the power plant cannot be like an exotic race motor, right? It has to be a production-based engine. So guess what they're using? The
A
Ford.
3 liter twin turbo?
No. I expected it to be an EcoBoost like you. But they're using a Coyote V8. It's a 5 liter V8 that they're using.
Is it supercharged? Turbocharged?
No.
Oh, so it's naturally aspirated.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't expect, I thought I could have sworn almost everybody has some sort of turbocharging, or you know what I mean? Like some sort of,
For production, yeah.
yeah. So it's interesting that they didn't do that.
So obviously, you know, like I'm not heavily into motorsports, like I don't know every detail. So when I was
Sure.
there, I was basically like a sponge, you know, just like soaking stuff in. And the other
Right.
thing that I learned is that there's also a power limit that they set on these race cars. So it's very similar to like NASCAR, for example, right? Where there's certain restrictor plates, you know, like from the past, where they would be restricted in certain areas of power. Well, this one, they have a sensor on the output shaft of the engine for all the racing vehicles. And it senses the power coming out of it. And it cannot be more than X amount, which is about like 400 pound feet of torque. So it's less than, it has to be less than that. So that's how they're regulated. But everything else is basically you could throw as much money at it as you want. So they built a custom roll cage, custom chassis. It's all tube chassis, very, you know, cleverly designed, obviously computer aided. The engine, the V8 engine is actually in the middle. So between where the driver sits and the navigator co-pilot sits, they're sitting almost where the engine meets the transmission.
Well, that makes sense for balance.
So the engine is basically moved, right, it's behind the front axle. So let me give you just a couple of specs so you kind of get an idea of how big this thing is.
Please.
So the wheelbase is almost the same as a Bronco Raptor. So if you think of a four-door Bronco Raptor, this wheelbase of this racing vehicle, this race Raptor, is almost a little bit longer than that. So it has really
But
great
not as
upwards.
long as like a as a Ranger Raptor.
Not quite that
So,
long.
yeah, so in between those two sizes.
In between. It's rolling on 37s. So basically almost the same tire size as the Bronco Raptor. Different tires though, racing type tires, not production tires that you can find on the Bronco Raptor. Then it has a ton of, articulation and or travel, a lot of suspension travel. Fox shocks. So they're using Fox. And then it's 9 inches wide, which is humongous. And that's allowed. It's allowed to be up to 90 inches wide, which means it's 3 inches wider than an F-150 Raptor. So it's humongously wide.
It's almost a box shape if you were to look down on it from above.
Kind
That's
of, yeah.
crazy.
Yeah. So it has dual lockers, front and rear lockers. It's got a 6-speed sequential transmission. And the engine is rated at about 355 horsepower and about almost 400 pound-feet of torque because that's limited, right, by the regulation. So, yeah. What do you think? What do you think, dude?
Well, does this go up against directly against the Hilux? Does it so the class that it's in, because there's a car class and there's a truck class,
The truck,
right?
yeah, the trucks are semi trucks basically. That's what they call
No,
trucks.
but I mean there isn't there a separate class for the slightly smaller cars, like what Mini is putting in? And or are they all in the same class battling?
There's several car classes, once again. In the T1 Plus, I'm pretty sure there's four manufacturers represented there. Mini is one of them right now. So the Mini Dakar race cars are there. Then there's new Dacia or Dacia.
Oh,
Dacia.
Dacia.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got a like a really awesome race vehicle on there.
Yeah, so they have some there. And then Toyota. So Toyota is fielding a couple of their Hilux. They're also highly customized, but they're based on the Hilux, basically. And then the Ford. So there's four of them. There's also other people racing their own vehicles, right? And there's smaller
Of course.
classes, like there's like Can-Am, there's side-by-side classes, there is motorcycle classes and other classes in this race.
I was gonna ask now. Well, I wasn't gonna ask now, but what about the classics? Were they there?
Yes.
Because that's my favorite.
Yes. I was so I after we camped out, we finally got back to the bivouac. Bivouac is basically traveling the pit area and mechanic area, and that's, dude, I didn't realize all the mechanics are sleeping in tents, basically. So it's pretty raw.
They're completely exposed to the elements. So if there's a massive windstorm or some sort of desert storm, or if it's super hot or super cold, they're stuck. And they have to provide, I think that in the old days, they had to provide their own tents and everything else too.
Yeah,
But
and the
today,
first Ford team, I mean, this is kind of their first official year as a manufacturer-backed team.
I can't believe they're doing this.
But they've done World Rally Championships for decades, right? So they've learned a lot through the years. So they actually got them, those wedge tents, on top of rooftop tents. So most of the mechanics now, some of them used to sleep on the ground. But then if it rains, let's say it doesn't rain very often, but if it
No.
rains, it kind of washes everything down, right? So at least they're now able to get off the ground and into tents above ground. So at least that's good.
So tell me, did you get to watch an actual leg of the race?
A little bit, yes. And we'll talk about classic
Ooh.
in a second because I was walking around the bivouac and I was thinking about you, of course, because in front of me was a Pajero. Basically,
Oh, don't hurt me.
yes, classic ones, two-door ones.
Oh,
Yes.
my favorite. Oh, my God. Okay. So,
I almost
go
wanted to call you, but there's a 10-hour
on.
difference, 10-hour time zone difference.
Well, thank you for not. Oh, my God. That's awesome.
but the first day we experienced one of the legs, but it's a tough sport to spectate because it's a 2-week event. In this one, this year, it
Right.
was a 12-stage event. Total distance is over 4,700 miles of off-road driving and racing. That's a huge
So it,
difference.
you could look at it, you could, pardon me, but you could look at it as four Baja 1000s.
Basically, yes.
Right.
Into
And
one.
that's where the argument is about the world's toughest race. And the thing is that both races have had their share of fatalities. But I believe Dakar has been more deadly all around. Almost
Yeah.
every year, somebody dies.
And I mean the Baja 1000, don't you finish it in one go, right? You mean you get in your race vehicle and you try to complete the distance, basically.
It's not as navigation heavy as, see, Dakar mixes both. It's navigation, you need to find these waypoints. If you miss one, then you lose a ton of time.
Yeah.
Or gain a ton of time, I guess, would be what it technically is. Whereas in with Baja, I believe it's you still have to follow a route, but it's not the same type of thing of navigation, and you barrel through. They both are remarkably dangerous, but I think that they are in different levels, and I think that's part of the reason why the vehicles are different, because there have been people, Americans, who have taken Baja vehicles and brought them to Dakar with mixed results. Robbie Gordon, I think, was doing that for a while with Hummer and
Yeah.
some other stuff, but and he had mixed results. So it's really a question, I think, of some of these new ones having all new tech are just blowing people's minds. And
Yeah.
that's including this Ford, which is supposed to be super capable.
Exactly. And I believe Robbie Gordon's vehicle was two-wheel drive for many years. He was
Yeah, he
participating.
did a buggy. So they do
Yeah.
like buggies, which essentially are super flexible, super suspended vehicles that are rear drive, which have their the thing about those is that they're much faster on sand in general because there's less drag, and they tend to be a little bit more efficient. Once again, less drag. But the other side of it is all-wheel drive has its thing. It's better traction, better launch, and there's just like two different ways of looking at it. And buggies have won Dakar before many times. So, yeah, it's an interesting mix. It's one of the things I love about that race is that it's not necessarily dependent on how tech heavy you are. It's how savvy you are at driving and the vehicle you drive. You know how they say, like, oh, it's the car that did it, or it's the driver that this is really truly a mix of the two, and the navigator, of course. So,
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm geeking out and I'm trying desperately not to because I want to hear more of your story.
Well, no, I
So,
appreciate it, dude. That's why I really wanted to be with you for this story because I knew you also appreciate the story quite a lot.
I love Dakar. It is the most challenging race in the world. In my book, people who either do WRC style rally racing or this or mix it, which by the way, I believe there's at least three different drivers who are WRC drivers who are currently racing right now at Dakar.
Yeah.
Sebastian Loeb is one of them.
Yeah.
I know that. And I know that because I'm pretty sure my wife is interested in that because I think she kind of digs with the fact that he's a handsome dude. So he
He's
pisses me
also
off.
French.
Between you and me and
Yeah.
everybody else who's out there. Yeah. He's at, we met him and he was a really nice guy and it really angered me. I was like, oh, please be an angry Frenchman, please. And he wasn't. He was really, he's a nice guy. But see, now you got me thinking about classics and the classics. They introduced that I believe 3 years ago or maybe even 4 years ago,
It
and it
was,
took off like a shot, right?
yeah.
So tell me about the
So,
classic.
yeah. So this is interesting. I don't know quite all of the regulations that you have to be under, but there's at least, I believe, two kind of categories of classics. First, it's the vehicle that used to race before. So they have some vehicles who race the car. They were out of racing for like 2 decades or so, or
Yeah, I
maybe
think it is
more.
going to be 20 years.
Something, yeah. And then they were allowed to re-enter, basically, in their own class. And they also don't follow the entire distance, I think. I think there are certain areas where I think they shorten their race a little bit because they're not as fast, maybe, as some of the brand new vehicles that are kind of moving through it. So their distances are a little bit different. And then there's also, like, for example, Emmy met a gentleman who from Spain who has a what appeared to be, we looked at it, it was a Porsche 959. This basically hypercar, but it
Yeah.
was lifted on BF Goodrich tires, on BFGs. And we were mind blown by seeing this. And then finally Emmy met the gentleman who drives it and owns it, and we learned that it was a 959 body kit on a 911 4S. So it was a 911. It was rebodied. He got, put a roll cage in it. He lifted it off the ground a little bit, but not a lot. I mean, it didn't have a lot of clearance. He put tires on it and he entered the race. So there were some vehicles which were classic, so to speak, but also kind of new, right? Because it was a vehicle that was built up in order to do this event.
The cool thing about the old days of the car were the first decade. They were a little bit less, they were less difficult when it came to the rules. So some of the cars that entered had very little horsepower, 80 horsepower or something like that, even less in some cases, little dune buggy, stuff like that. Vehicles that actually, in some cases, won, tiny, tiny little things. Volkswagen-based powertrains, stuff like that. But then you also had these super turbo, crazy rally cars that were modified to go and fight it out in Dakar. And we're talking Lancia, we're talking Peugeot, Renault. There's guys who are running around in Ferrari-powered vehicles.
Yeah,
It
there's
was insane.
Audi probably.
Oh,
All
Audi was all over it. Audi's a funny thing because they're kind of back. And I'm
yeah.
curious if you saw their new racer. It's
They
a hybrid.
didn't participate this year. That was weird.
Oh, they were there. Maybe because they're pissed off about last year.
They were probably upset about last year.
Yeah,
Basically,
so it didn't go well.
they had a high-tech hybrid powered insane machines, right? These were highest ultimate class T1 plus class vehicles,
Right.
but they were not successful. And I think part of it was because complexity maybe got in the way.
Yeah.
I don't know, of course, all the details there, but they did not participate this year. But Ford actually had a couple of drivers, or at least one driver, Matthias Elkstrom. He was driving the Audi last year. And now
Yeah.
he's driving for Ford this year. So that happens.
Were there any all electric vehicles? They were working on having an all electric class at one point.
No, and that's the thing. I also, first of all, I did not see any electric vehicles. In the classic division, I was walking around. For example, I saw like a 1990 Nissan Hardbody
Right.
that was prepped for that car. I was thinking about Tommy this moment. I saw two Citroëns, two CVs.
Chabot's?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic. They actually are really well adjusted for that type of terrain,
Yeah.
surprisingly so. I was telling you about vehicles that have very little horsepower. Those vehicles, I think that they put in the beefier engine, which was at best 70 horsepower, but I've been told as low as 50.
Yeah.
Regardless, yeah, but they're built for, they're sturdy and for longevity, and I've seen them all over the desert. I stayed in the Middle East for a while in the past, so I've seen these things. What's really cool, though, right, is the fact that they're mixed. This is the thing about the classics. they mix them all together.
Yes.
So you're just seeing so much nostalgia running, including trucks.
Exactly. So I saw brand new semis. You know, there's a, you know, like International had a truck. There's a lot of Tatra based vehicles. So I was thinking about Roman. You know, Roman is from the Czech Republic, and you know, Tatra semi trucks are all over the car. And Mercedes was there with Unimogs, basically racing Unimogs versions, giant semis as well. These things are insane. The Unimog.
So, man there?
Yes, man was there. Scania was there.
Iveco.
Who?
Iveco.
Oh yeah, Iveco was there too. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the Russians probably weren't there. They used to dominate, absolutely dominate the truck class.
Yes.
And some of their trucks were faster, frankly, than some of the cars. Like, they were crazy how good they were. But with what's currently going on politically, I believe they weren't involved, or they decided not to go. I don't know how that worked.
Yeah, no, there are no Kamaz vehicles whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't get to interview any of the big truck guys. So I was there. So we watched a little bit of the race the first day. And it's hard to watch because, like I said, it's a humongously long distances. And we waited there for like 3 hours. And then finally we saw motorcycles go by because they go first. But then another hour went by or so. Then the racing cars, car class, the T1s came by. So we actually saw the Ford Raptor vehicles go by. They're very impressive at speed. The sound is incredible, especially the V8 sound that's coming out of this Raptor racing vehicle is incredible. Also unique. You can kind of tell it from a distance. You know, a mile away, you could hear it. Hear the difference.
Well, it's almost like NASCAR compared to, you know, Formula One or something like
but
that.
But also
right?
High revving. You know, it's not like a traditional NASCAR type sound. It's a little bit higher pitched because it's kind of a higher revving engine, and it's just spinning and screaming.
That's I can imagine.
So I also created a video. So if you're listening or watching this podcast, we also have on TFL Offroad, we have actual like racing footage that I was able to grab because I was also there for Shakedown. So the second day was rest day because they race for 6 days. They rest one day and then they race another 6 days basically. And the rest day is really resting for the drivers.
Right.
It's not resting for the mechanics because they have to rebuild the cars. You know, they have to fix everything. They have to correct all the stuff that happened. And when they fix it, they do some shakedowns, basically. So I was able to participate in a shakedown with Ford. That was amazing. I was able to see them take the car apart, put it back together within a matter of hours, basically.
Right.
And then in the afternoon on the second day, which was the rest day, we went into the desert just next to the bivouac, basically, because everything is just wide open deserts, just land over there. And I saw them run. It was really amazing.
Super cool. Did you get to drive anything?
Well, so the only things we drove were the F-150 Raptors that...
Oh, poor baby.
The production ones. Not...
Still...
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's I'm not upset by this because, and Emmy and I were, I was very curious. I mean, Emmy's been there before, right?
So yeah.
Emmy's been to Saudi Arabia before. I was very curious because at first it kind of looked to me like Johnson Valley, right? But we got closer and I realized this is nothing like California or any other region almost that I've been to because, really kind of sharp looking little stones, like volcanic rock, it seemed, and some hills, you know, in the distance, you know, there were some mountains. And also very few trails or roads. And what seems like happens, we saw a herd of camel, probably about 80 or 100 camel. And I mean, the only time I've seen camel is in the zoo, right?
Right.
So this was quite special. And they're just roaming free range camel. And we saw some of the herders who are driving Chevy Suburbans, and they've got some feed, for the camels, and they're kind of taking care of some of the camels. There's also little babies. What is a baby camel called? Just a baby camel?
Camel
Or
Little.
camel little?
Camel Little. So the big ones are Camelot, and then the smaller ones are Camel Little.
There you go. I don't know
I
anything.
have no clue what they're. I know that there's like one hump or two. That's all I got.
These were single humpers, single humps.
Okay. Dormant something or other.
And then there's washes, right? So the water comes down the valley, right? And so there's no moisture, no rain, but there was some sandy washes that you could kind of go through where the creeks are. So that part was a little similar to Johnson Valley. The washes were similar, but the sand was really fine, really fine, like powder, almost like powder. And it was really cool. I mean, I experienced a whole new type of terrain. You know what it looked like from a distance? If you kind of like look into the distance and take a picture of it, it almost looked like a pictures we get from Mars in a way. Because it
Okay.
had that kind of reddish tint to it, old sand, kind of volcanic structures, or at least it seemed volcanic to me. Almost looks like Mars. It was kind of alien to me, but very, very cool.
Well, that sounds like you had an amazing adventure. How long did you stay?
So about 2 nights and 2 days, pretty short trip, but it's all business. I really wanted to get a great story. So I interviewed, so there's an American driver for Ford, Mitch. And then there's Matias, there's Nani Roma, there's Carlos Sainz Sr., who's
The
racing for
man,
Ford,
yeah,
the Matador.
El Matador.
Yes. So he wasn't there. Carlos Sainz Sr. wasn't there because, unfortunately, he had a bit of an incident. He rolled in one of the dunes, rolled the vehicle. The vehicle was able to get upright. So our Mitch Guntry Jr., the other driver for the Ford team, came out and helped. He basically righted him and, with a strap, got him back on the wheels. They kind of fixed the car. They completed the stage with no windscreen. They had to remove the windscreen. So that's why we love the race, right? Because a lot of things can happen and it's very, very challenging. And then he was disqualified because when he arrived, the officials inspected the roll cage at the top and they saw it was bent. And you're not allowed to fix roll cages during the race. And they disqualified.
Oh no.
Yeah. So that
I
was.
mean, I get it. I know it's a safety issue, but that sucks.
Yeah.
But it also shows the other side of this. This is a race that requires a lot of grit, but it's also strictly regulated. And part of the reason why is to prevent people from dying, even though this is El Matador, and he, frankly, if he says I'm good to go, you let him go, but that's just me.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry to hear that, but it happens. So keep going. Keep going.
Yeah.
Tell me
And
more.
then so you mentioned Sebastian Loeb. So he's
Oh, yeah.
racing for Dacia, right? Or sometimes you say Dacia. I heard it's pronounced different
Well, the
ways.
British say Dacia.
Yeah.
That's how, what's his name? James May says the Dacia Sandero. So he has like a C. I don't know because it's not a brand that we deal with. So I just say Dacia.
Yeah, so Sebastian Loeb races on their team. By the way, this is also the first year for them as well. So they have a really custom-built race truck as well. And Loeb also had an accident, also had an incident. He was driving, and actually this is on camera, so they had a helicopter showing this. He kind of crossed this diagonal ditch. There was a ditch that was kind of running diagonally across the trail. And
Right.
the rear end kind of hopped up on one side and then he rolled.
Oh.
He also was, everybody's fine, by the way. No injuries. In Carlos's case and then Sebastian's case also. But they were able to get the car back on the ground. He finished it. Once again, bent frame, bent roll cage. So he was also disqualified. So probably two of the most successful rally racers, so to speak, in recent history.
In history.
And also in Dakar participation, were out. Wow. By the time I got there.
They need to sort of sort that out, because it's no good for their reputation to get rid of these two stars. I don't know, give them a chance to drive another car, something, right?
Yeah,
whatever.
But that's kind of racing. You know, we talk about Pikes Peak Hill Climb, right, here in Colorado.
Which Sebastian Loeb broke a record, by the way.
Exactly. Sebastian Loeb holds the record there. But you could only run it one day a year in June. And if something happens that day and you don't finish it, that's it. You have to come back another year. So,
well, I mean, our driver, Paul, former Stig driver that works with TFL, he's done that mountain dozens of times, and he's had so many problems on that day, where the day before his qualifying was really good and it looked like he could really make a dent in the record books. And then that day, a misfire, the car itself has some issues. You know what I mean? Like, the tiny little things just absolutely destroy the whole race.
Exactly.
So it's even more magnified at a big race like the car. So continue and end this, because I'm curious to see what happened. And also, how long was your flight?
It took me about 36 hours to get there and maybe about 30 hours to get home as far as flights. And I had to take four planes each way. So, so this is not ideal, obviously. But it's really, there's not a lot of better ways to do it. This was done, you know, I actually flew on Qatar Airways, and Qatar Airways apparently, and that now I can attest to this, they have some of the best service, you know, some of the best kind of, you know, airplane food that I've ever tasted. That was quite nice. But the trips there and back, you know, you have to make three different connections for four planes. But without issues, I really was lucky. Didn't miss any connections either way. So was really incredible. So we were publishing this podcast, Nathan, on Friday and Saturday. Mm-hmm. This is basically the end of the race. So there's still 3 days of racing that we don't know results of. So we still don't know if Ford was able to take a podium at the time that you and I are talking right now. But Mathias Elkstrom, he is number three in the overall standings right now as we speak. So there's a fourth car on the podium right now. But of course, things could change, right? Things can still change.
This is what this race is known for, right? And it's, you could win almost every stage and still not win the race. I mean, that's how the thing goes, right?
Yeah, and also, I didn't realize this, but strategy is so important in this, because if you win a stage in the middle of the race or early in the race, you have to go first the next day.
And a lot of people, is not ideal.
Right. A lot of people don't want to leave the first next day, because you basically have an open, there's no tracks. You have no idea where other people may have gone or not gone. Not that you trust every track you see out there, but still it's helpful to see tracks in front of you. So sometimes people actually slow down before the finish line in order not to finish first. So this is really crazy, crazy stuff.
You'll actually see people who are underneath another person by only a second or two, who are way ahead by like 30 seconds. And often that's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to avoid getting that first place on those types of runs. And this is a team order too, usually. Like, you know, hey, we know for a fact this is coming up. You need to slow the hell down.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm happy to report that I think it was stage 9. Just this morning I learned this. Nani Roma won a stage. So this is incredible. Like I said, you know, he's in his 50s and he's with a new team. Ford is a brand new team, brand new vehicle. He was able to win a stage. This is huge. But he's out of contention. So Nani Roma probably will not win or come close to winning the Dakar itself, because he had a couple problems. He had an engine failure earlier in the race. Got it fixed, but it was a penalty, right? Because being towed on the race course and also replacing an engine, That's a penalty. And he also had almost a head-on collision with another racing driver. The collision, he told me, was about at like almost 90 degrees to each other, where a bunch of drivers were kind of missing this waypoint, and everybody was circling around. And he came out of this canyon, and he couldn't react fast enough because as soon as he came out of the canyon, he was basically running. Another vehicle ran into him. So they were able to fix it in the desert by themselves, dude. This is crazy. They were
This
carrying
is
spare
what
parts.
this is Dakar. This is exactly what's so damn cool. There's another driver who I'm really fond of, Nasser Al-Attiyah. He was running with BMW in the past. I don't know who he's racing with this year. I didn't check into that, but he's usually really fast. I think he was with Red Bull. Oh, bless you. Last time I checked, let's see if I'm looking him up right now. Let me see here real quick. Yeah, he's running with Red Bull. I don't know how he's doing though, but this is a guy who's won the race a few times, and he's been with Mini, and I think he was also with Toyota once as
I
well.
think he's still Toyota this year, I believe. I know him. I didn't meet him, but I do have a lot of respect for him as well.
Oh God, yeah, he's really fast, and he's been in it for a while too. I guess there's something to be said about having a little bit of experience and being the good old man driving these races. If you guys look up the history of Dakar, which once again, my contention is it is the toughest race, thus the best drivers in the world for everything, motorcycle all the way up to semis. But if you look up the history of people who have won the race, you guys might be very surprised because it's a real mix. There are, as far as I know, no American champions, not with cars or trucks, I believe.
But I think we have a side-by-side winner for sure.
I think we have a side by side, and I think we did really well with motorcycles a couple of years ago, but I don't know if we won at all. But there's like women have won this race before, like big time. Jette Kleinschmidt has won, I think, twice with Volkswagen. So there's like there's just a real interesting mix of people who've won this, and every single rally driver I've met so far has been cool, grounded, and a lot of fun to hang out with, especially after a race. Before a race, they tend to be a little bit on edge, but after a race, they tend to be like chill and a lot of fun to hang out with. So, wow, what an incredible opportunity you had. I'm so glad you made the most of it. Anything you take away from this? Is there anything like that just like really blew your mind?
I think it's the difficulty of it, and also couple points. Finally, I know we're running a little bit short on time here. Nani Roma told me, I asked him what was his favorite memory from Dakar racing, because he's done it what for 29 years almost, 28
Something like
years.
that. I think he might be the longest run of everybody.
And he only missed 1 year. In that span of years, he only missed 1 year. He told me his favorite time was in the mid 90s on his motorcycle, because you're by yourself basically racing in Africa, and they had paper maps, they
Yeah.
had old scrolls.
It's on a scroll, like a bottom and top scroll that you scroll through. Yeah.
On a scroll, being by himself, navigating, racing, and he said meeting native people, of those lands, and kind of communicating with them, however he could, and like just seeing the genuine, local people. And he told me that was his favorite memory from all these years. And he also said he also picked up a phone and kind of threw it to the side, because like this was before phones, this was before, GPS tablets and all this stuff.
Sure.
But he told me that was one of his favorite things. And the other thing that I took away is that, like, you and I have done many long drives together, like Motor Mountain USA. That was very hard, because we went to 50 states in 12 months.
Yeah.
Just and covered what 35,000 miles, I think, at least.
Something like that. And you and I alone probably covered a good 20,000 of that plus.
Yeah. So even though that seemed hard, this is harder and mentally hard. It's not just physical, it's physically hard, it's mentally hard. And it's also a team effort. We have a small team here. I mean, you're talking about sometimes dozens of people working as one, and watching the four team work and how organized they are. I was just flabbergasted. They were changing, transmissions and suspension systems overnight. Everything is calculated. They know where everything goes. They have to travel. Those semi trucks with all the tools have to go from one place to the next, within a day's notice.
That was the original purpose of the truck class, because they weren't racers at first. Those big trucks were specifically there to handle all of the stuff that these cars and boat bikes needed. And then people realized in some cases these trucks are going really fast. Why not just have them as racers as well? I don't know when that was established, but it's really interesting to see. And some of the trucks that have run are incredible. But I think that's a whole different conversation. We could talk for hours about that.
But semi trucks, like I looked underneath some of them. I mean, think about all the components you would find on a pickup truck, and then double or triple size. Like you supersize the components. I mean, the leaf springs are probably 6 feet long. And like several inches wide. The shocks are about 4 inches, 5 inches in diameter. They have hydraulics. They have, compressed air because they're running airbags or something else. These vehicles are, they're like over 10,000 kilograms. So like over 22,000 pounds of just diesel powered massiveness. They're just racing across these deserts. It's something to behold.
You know what's always interesting to me, and this is another thing about Dakar, which it's kind of true in Baja as well, but I think it's more pronounced in Dakar. You could have these teams like Ford, who is a it's a military precision by comparison, right? Everything's lined up, they have, big budget, they have the amazing vehicles, great design. And then you have that one guy or that one girl on a motorcycle or a quad. Who's just got a backpack, right? And maybe their own tools. And I think you are required to have a mechanic at every bivouac, but I think you can actually share mechanics in some cases and stuff like that. And there are people who on shoestring budgets are running these races and are able to compete doing it that way. And I just think that the comparison between the two is incredible. The dichotomy is just, it's mind-blowing. One of the many reasons why this is the most amazing race. Can I tell you a quick story? I didn't discover Dakar until I was about 10 years old. So you were a little tiny little thing by then, but I think it was around 1981. And I was in New York with my dad. And there was this big TV in this smoky bar. And I was sitting in the back, I think I was eating peanuts or chips or something. And I could see the TV, and they were showing the rally. And I had never seen anything like it before in my life, because bear in mind that I was exposed to Baja early days here in California, but never anything like that. Back then, they were showing, there was a race cars, Peugeots and stuff like that, bouncing around and jumping over hills, blew my mind. And I walked around that bar like an idiot, asking people, what is that? And nobody knew what the hell it was. And it was all blurry, back black and white TV, all that other stuff. That was my introduction to Dakar, and it hooked me. It hooked me. And nobody could tell me a damn thing. My dad comes in with all his army buddies. I'm like, hey, Dad, what is this? And I'm like, I don't know what the hell it is. It's some French guy going crazy in the sand. Duh. So I had to discover it on my own. And in America, for some reason, it's caught on a little bit, but just, I think that that should be the most important race in the world. It's so good. But I digress. I wanted to just go tell you how I got hooked into it.
Well, I think you brought up a great point because I experienced the same thing because not a lot of people I talked to, I said, I'm going to Dakar. And people said, what? Where? Why? Why? I experienced the same thing. And I think, I mean, I think it's something that a lot of Americans would love, but
Oh, God, yeah.
we just don't get exposed to it. But hopefully, by you and I talking about it, by us publishing video, more people will find out about it. There's American drivers now participating. There used
Right.
to be no American drivers participating.
Or very few, like
Yeah.
one here and one there.
So I think maybe even next year we'll have a lot more support, a lot more people watching, and it's going to be good for everybody.
I would agree 100%. I think Andre and I both agree that this is one of the best and most difficult races out there, with the most variety, by the way. If you're into off-roading, if you're into trucks, motorcycles, or cars, it really covers such a huge gamut, and it is truly a challenge. One final thing on that, and that is a question that I want to pose to you, my friend, but the audience. Now, Range Rover, Land Rover, they've participated. As I mentioned, almost every French automaker has had several vehicles in there. Japanese, they've hit it. Mitsubishi's won it. I think they still have the record for 12, but I'm not 100% sure if they still keep that record. BMW's done it. Obviously, Mini's
Volkswagen.
done it.
Volkswagen.
Volkswagen, right? Where's Jeep? Where is Jeep?
Where is Chevrolet?
Chevrolet had a guy who put one in, and there's actually been a couple of Jeeps that have been in there, but I'm talking about a sponsored race. The most
Factory.
rugged vehicle out there that you can buy next to a Ford Bronco would probably be a Jeep Wrangler, and it's been that way for years. Why aren't they racing in this? What is going on? So, big question.
I think we should pick up a phone and call Stellantis
I
right now.
think you should do that, my friend. And I'm
And
behind you
finally,
100%.
thank you. And finally, El Matador is 62 years old. So Nathan, you and I have hope. You and I have
Roman
hope.
has hope because he's basically about the same age as Roman.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So you and I can go and participate, or at least, cover the races for the audiences, but what if we could drive there?
Oh my God.
That would be something.
I do have some rally experience, but this is from 25 years ago. I participated in Rally of the Rim and I was driving an old Volvo 240 that doesn't quite qualify. However, if we were to take classes and stuff like that, and if Roman were willing to give us a little bit of a race so we could actually find a way to buy a vehicle, what about a Bujanka? A Bujanka with a V8. We'll
Yes.
rally your van.
Yes.
Oh, it would go in the classics,
Yes.
kind of.
And also, David can weld, so he can make a roll cage for us. Yeah, it's
Oh
done.
yeah. We'll
It's
bring
done.
David. That way we'll have somebody at the bivouac. We'll bring
Oh, yeah.
David and Case. We'll bring Case. So that way we look better.
Yes.
But he also knows how to fix things too. So okay, so there,
Right.
we're gonna put it out there. I'm sure Roman will say yes.
I'm sure. All right, guys,
Well,
thanks for joining us.
thank
We'll see
you.
you. Yeah, we'll see you next time. We do this every week, and check out oldcfl.com. We want to thank our Patreon supporters. So I really appreciate your help at patreon.com/tflcar, and of course all of our partners as well. So really appreciate it. Thank you.
Ciao, Bella, guys. Take care. We'll see you next time.